You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
It's blazing hot outside. You get in your car to turn on the AC to get cold air pumping, but it blows hot air out. This issue is commonly caused by low refrigerant due to leaks in the AC system. You want an easy, all-in-one solution that will restore the cold air in no time. AC Pro Recharge Kits make restoring cold air easy for even those with zero DIY experience in less than 10 minutes. Save time and money versus going to a shop by picking up an AC Pro Recharge Kit today. Be a pro with AC Pro.
Boston Lose Baseball, episode 111, another series win for the Nationals, who took 2 of 3 from the Astros. They're within 1 of .500 as they get ready for another set with the Dodgers, this time at home. Mitchell Parker shine. CJ Abrams continues to perform at a high level. Let's get into it right now on Bustin' Loose Baseball, episode 111.
Bustin' Loose Baseball, hosted by Grant Paulson and Toby Altizer, gives you in-depth analytics and interviews on everything baseball in the nation's capital. Now, here's your host, Grant Paulson and Toby Altizer.
This is Bustin' Loose Baseball, episode 111. I'm Grant Paulson, joined as always by Toby Altizer, producer Darris Dameron, making everything sound smooth. The Nats have taken 2 of 3 from the Astros, another series win. They've won 8 of their last 13 now as they find themselves 10-11. Toby, hard not to be impressed with back-to-back wins over the Astros and now a game from 500.
Yeah, it's crazy, right, Grant? They've won 3 out of their last 4 series. They went on the road. They had a 5-4 road trip. They took 2 of 3 from the Giants. They took 2 of 3 from the Dodgers. They took 2 of 3 from the Astros when they came back home. And naturally, the only series they lost out of the last four was in Oakland to the A's, which they probably could have won that series, too, if it weren't for some different managerial decisions by Davey Martinez and the starting pitching. So they've had a good run here. This team is just one game below 500, and I don't know that they're surpassing expectations, because this is largely what we saw in the second half of last season. But, I mean, this is a team that is playing a lot of competitive baseball. It's really good to see that they're able to compete, and I'm excited to see what they can do the rest of the season. Like you mentioned in the start, CJ Abrams is looking like a superstar.
Yeah, we'll get into him in a second. Here's why I am impressed. I mean, it's one thing if they sweep the A's or something to get 3 of their 10 wins. And people forget that's the one series that they didn't win here recently. They take 2 of 3 from the Dodgers, a potential World Series team. They take 2 of 3 from the Astros. I know they're off to a slow start, but that'll be a playoff team and another team good enough to win a World Series. They went out to San Francisco, took 2 of 3 from the Giants on the road cross country, which isn't easy. You got to go back to the Philly series, other than the blip against the A's, which was, you know, right at the start of the first week of the year. So I think to be playing their projected win total, and I'm not saying that I didn't like the over, was what, 66, 65 and a half, whatever it was. And you know, you're playing basically 80-win baseball right now. So I like what they're doing, and particularly I like who they're doing it against. Most importantly, all year long, though, is going to be who is doing the, you know, heavy lifting. And if we just start with, as we're taping on Sunday, what a performance by Mitchell Parker. 7 innings of 3-hit scoreless ball. 7 shutout with no walks and 8 strikeouts. We told you that one of his bugaboos in the minor leagues had been off and on walks. That was kind of one of the big issues. He's never been hit that much, but the hits hurt you more when you've got runners on because you walk people, and that's been a problem for him. He's gone 12 innings and 2 starts, so an average of 6 per. 7 hits in 12 innings, which is pretty dominant. 12 strikeouts, and he's allowed 2 runs both in that first outing. He's got a 1.5 ERA. But just to give some specifics on his outing, Toby, I mean, pretty historical in the sense that he was just the 5th pitcher in the history of Major League Baseball to strike out 12 without a walk in his first 2 games of his career. The list is Shota Imanaga this year, Tanner Bibee of the Guardians a year ago, Johnny Cueto back in the day, and Andy Sonnenstein way, way back when. He also is the first national to throw seven shutout innings on fewer than 75 pitches. He did that on 73 pitches today. Could have gone back for the eighth. Davey didn't let him. First pitcher to throw seven innings on 73 or fewer pitchers in all of baseball since Kyle Wright did it in August 2 years ago at Pittsburgh against a bad Pirates team. So he did it against the Astros lineup. Second straight win to start his career. So really, really impressive. Hard not to be happy for Mitchell Parker and about what he's done.
Yeah, I think it's really impressive because eight strikeouts, only the three hits, and like you mentioned, no walks. I mean, this is something where you look at it and go, can Mackenzie Gore take a page out of this book? Because it's not like he gets hit around all the time, or if he does, it's weak contact. Whereas Mitchell Parker's out here pitching efficiently. He's still striking out batters. Like I said, eight strikeouts and not walking anybody. You love the fact that he's pounding the zone. He did this in his first start at Dodger Stadium, which I think was so impressive. Just on Jackie Robinson Day, all the hoopla, he goes out there, doesn't walk anybody, and then he follows it up. I mean, how about your first two starts as a major leaguer? You're going up against the Dodgers with Otani and Betts and Freeman, and then you don't even get a respite. You're going right back out there against the Astros, and you go do historic things, and you become the first Nats pitcher to make it through the seventh this year. And like you talked about, this team has had great starting pitching throughout its tenure. You've got Strauss, you've got Scherzer, you've got Gio Gonzalez, you got even Corbin, all these different guys, and none of them have gone through seven innings with that sort of efficiency. It's just incredible what Parker has done, and just watching the way that he's going about it, too. It's not like it's some fluke. Like, some of the splitters he threw today as we record on Sunday were absolutely nasty. His fastball was working. The curve is good. Like, he's got some plus pitches. It'll be interesting to see how the league adjusts now that they've gotten, you know, 12 innings worth of work that they can look at. But he looks the part so far on the major league mound. And like you talked about, the big bugaboo that he's had in the minor leagues is walks. Hadn't walked anyone yet. So maybe this is something, if he just continues to be aggressive in the zone and lets his stuff do the work, I don't know. Maybe they found something here with Mitchell Parker.
Yeah, we talked about when Jake Irvin came up last year. We kind of thought spot start, couple starts, you know, back of the rotation, not a whole lot of expectation. Well, I'll tell you what, I mean, if Josiah Gray is ready to come back here soon, you know, they're going to have a tough decision to make. Not with JoJo, obviously, but somebody somewhere, because you can't take a guy out of the rotation, I wouldn't think, going the way that Parker is at 24 years old. Couple things that were better in this outing than his first one. Obviously, the pitching line speaks to that, but I mentioned when we talked about his first start, it was basically two pitches. It was just fastball, curveball, and that's predominantly been what he's been in the minors. This was not that. Fastball, 48% of the time. Curveball, 27% of the time. Splitter, 25% of the time. That is to say, he basically threw half of his pitches were fastballs, and then the curve and the splitter basically split in half, right, where he threw 20 curves, 18 splitters. So that's now a three-pitch mix, which is going to help you a lot. The splitter almost works as a changeup for him. It's got a little fade and that deception and a drop to it. As you said, a couple of nasty pitches in that regard. Fastball was not overpowering. You know, I was told he could run it up to 96, 97 maybe. We have not seen that yet, obviously. From the left side, he touched 93.6, so maxed out at 94, rounding up in this game. But curveball is about 81 miles an hour. Fastball was about 92. Splitter was in the mid-80s, around 85. It was just, you know, really efficient. I think I like the word you used, like an effective game plan. He executed perfectly against an outstanding lineup. It's hard not to pay him more compliments than that was the best start of the season by a national. And his two starts here back-to-back are probably the best two-start stretch a national has had this year.
Yeah, and it's something that's interesting. I mean, this is a guy that's made two major league starts now, and you wouldn't know it by how he conducts himself on the mound. I think it's impressive. You know, first start at Dodger Stadium, then your first start at Nats Park. You're facing good lineups, and he does this Kershaw thing where he raises his hands above his head, and maybe that's just his calming thing. But, you know, you see starting pitchers all the time get a little bit flustered in their first couple of starts, and they show a little bit of emotion. And I think this is just kind of Mitchell Parker's personality a little bit. He's very even keeled. I mean, you could hear in his post game interview after his first start at Dodger Stadium, he's not the most rambunctious guy of the group, but I think that's important for a guy where he stays very even keeled, and we haven't seen him have to go through too much stuff yet. I mean, the most he's given up is two runs and one in each inning, so he hasn't had anything like that yet. So he hasn't had crazy amounts of adversity on the mound, but I would think that when he starts facing some of that inevitably down the road, he's going to be able to remain even keeled, and I think that's important because, you know, I think having starts like he's had the first two starts of your major league career, not many guys can say that. Even the elite pitchers, they can struggle early on. So I'm excited to see what he can do. It's not like, you know, we're not throwing expectations that he's going to become the ace of the staff. But, I mean, this is like we talk about all the time. I don't know that they're the same pitcher, but we've talked about Irvin before, and Irvin was kind of, all right, he's going to come up and start here, or maybe he carves a role out in the bullpen, and he stuck all year in the staff and was able to be an effective part of the rotation last year. If Mitchell Parker can do that, I think that can help out this Nationals team, obviously this year, but going forward, I mean, they've got some guys that they're kind of fighting for those last couple of spots because you figure Corbin's going to be done after this year and Trevor Williams probably done after this year. So it's going to be something where, all right, who's going to take those spots? We thought maybe a Jackson Rutledge. Jake Irvin's kind of solidified himself. Now a Mitchell Parker's throwing his hat into the mix. You got to think, you know, obviously you've got Gore and Gray and Cavalli coming back at some point. This is a team that we felt was going to be short on starting pitching. Now it's looking like it's not as bad. They still need that top-end guy. They need that ace, whether it's Gore stepping up and taking that spot or they have to sign one in free agency down the line. But it's never a bad thing when you've got this sort of depth. Even if they're just fourth and fifth starters, it's not a bad thing to have that many guys that are showing you that they can at least give you something at the major league level.
eBay Motors is here for the ride. Remember when you first saw the potential? And then through some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Look to your left. Look to your right. It's official. No one's got a ride like this. There's nothing else that sounds like, feels like, or looks like the set of wheels in your garage. With over 122 million parts, you can make sure your number one ride or die stays running smoothly, so there's no limit to how far you can take it. Brake kits, turbochargers, engines, exhaust kits, roof racks, LED headlights, bumpers, whatever your baby needs, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus at these prices, well, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Zoom. These Toby Altizer, I'm Grant Paulson. It's Bustin' Loose Baseball. I just wanted to point out real quickly that the bullpen I thought was outstanding as well on Sunday. Parker's going to get all the headlines as he should, and he easily could have and probably should have gotten an eighth inning. But Dylan Floro pitched the eighth, was perfect. He's got a sub one ERA on the year. And then Matt Barnes pitched the ninth. He has pitched a lot better than I expected after kind of seeing him early on. Hitting a strikeout, ERA down to 3.2. There are better metrics to determine, you know, early season bullpen success, though, and he's been pretty solid. We did finally get to see C.J. Abrams steal another base. Now, he can't steal bases if he's just doubling and tripling constantly or homering. Now, I was laughing because he's leading the league in slug right now, coming into play today at 700. And he had 13 of 21 hits. 13 of his 21 hits were for extra bases, six homers, three triples, four doubles coming into the Sunday matinee. But immediately he got on base. He was on first and he stole second. And, you know, we're sitting here going, man, he's just not stealing a lot of bags. Well, you can't run when you're on third after you triple off Josh Hader or, you know, you're back in the dugout because you hit a home run. But in this Astros series, he hit his third leadoff home run of the season, his sixth of the year. At that point, he was homering every 11 or so at bats, which is just astounding. He was on base two more times because he did draw a walk today. I mentioned the steal. His OPS is 1034. His average is right now 297. other than Mookie Betts, who's not even truly a shortstop, he's moonlighting as one. I mean, you can make the case Abrams is having the best start to the season of anybody at the position. We've talked about it a lot. We've kind of overset it. But we got a star in our midst here, Toby. The guy is on fire, and he's as good a player right now as there is in the middle infield in the National League.
Yeah, and he showed it on Saturday. I think he's coming up clutch as well. Obviously, you get the first inning, you give up a run, and then he comes out, first pitch he sees, he sends over the right field wall, laser, 400 feet. I mean, at this point, I don't think you can be wowed by his power. We've talked about it enough. Every single time he hits one, it goes over 400 feet. So it's been incredible to watch that. But I think more impressively was ninth inning. You know, it's a spot where you can come up and you swing too big, you strike out, and honestly, you're not even going to blame the kid because he's a young kid trying to make something happen. But Senzel gets on first base with a catcher's interference, and what does Abrams do? He doubles, and now you got two guys in scoring position, down by two runs, and Winker's able to drive them in. You know, that's the sort of thing that a superstar-type player does. It doesn't always have to be the RBI, but you're just moving things along and making things happen, and that's what he did on Saturday. And I just think that you look at what he's been able to do early this season, you know, the stolen bases are going to come because, like you said, I don't think he's going to hit for this many extra base hits throughout the year. He's not going to lead the league in slugging percentage. But what he's done to start this year shows you that potential. We saw it last year for basically the month of July, and then we'd see spurts of it with a lot of stolen bases in the second half. But if you go back and look at some of his splits last year, largely his, especially, you know, batting average and on base percentage, largely that was propped up because of that month of July. Now we got to see this more consistently throughout the season, but what he's done this April is what we saw in July, and he's not showing any reason to really slow down. He's crushing the fastballs like we talked about on the last podcast, and I think there are some things that he can definitely clean up and work on, but his overall ability, you're seeing shine day in and day out. And I think that's got to be really encouraging for Nats fans because, you know, they kind of lacked that star power since they moved on from Soto, and understandably so. And, it looked like it was going to be that star power is going to have to come from the minor leagues, whether it was James Wood or Dylan Cruz. But that star power might already be here, and you can just add to that star power, which I think makes it even more incredible. You know, just thinking back to that Soto trade, you might have a superstar in Abrams. You might have a potential top two pitcher in Gore. You might have a true superstar in James Wood in the making. Like, there's just so much to be excited about for this team. And when you can show up to the ballpark every single day and watch number five, and you just feel good about him doing something that you can get fired up about, I think it just adds that extra excitement for a fan base that has kind of been drained a little bit over the last couple of years.
Tobes, I think we can start having a discussion about ceiling in the near future. And like, what's left in the tank here, and what are we talking about? Because like, he looks like a 30 homer, 40 steal player right now, and there just aren't many of those guys in the big leagues. Now, I don't want to get ahead of ourselves with the 30 homers, because I wouldn't have thought that. I would have said, you know, every year 20, and some years where it's 25 to 27. But six home runs this early in the season, and the way that he hits them, like, to me, this is more in-game power than you see from Trey Turner, certainly at that position, where, you know, it's 420, 430, pulled down the line, second deck, some of the stuff that he does. And he, again, I always say this, he's only 23, man. Like, he's getting stronger. He's getting more physically and mentally mature. He's just starting to figure this out. So in the near future, I think we're going to have to start talking about really what he's capable of, because he could be, you know, a World Series champion team, front running, you know, MVP type maybe. But let's just let him keep stacking pennies, as I like to say, and putting some performances together. No reason to rush that.
Real quick off that, Grant. Like, I don't think we're not going to go deep into this now, but I think that some of the stuff that he's doing is sustainable. I think some of the numbers are going to come back down to earth a little bit. You know, I don't think he's going to be a 300 hitter. I think he's going to, I would love that. I don't think he's going to have a 700 slug, But he's pulling the baseball a little bit more, which I don't know that the Nationals necessarily love, but I think that's something that, you know, he's talked about being able to pull it, and he's hitting line drives, and some of those line drives are turning into those homers. You know, it's not like he's always hitting moonshots. Like, the home run that he hit Saturday to lead off the game was a line drive. The double just barely missed being another home run. That's a line drive. Those sorts of things, when you're just putting consistent swings on it and it's almost accidental homers with the power that he has, yeah, I think that those things are more sustainable, and I think that's what's so encouraging. It's not things where in a few weeks you're like, all right, he's going to come back down to earth. If you're just hitting line drives all over the ballpark and some of them leave the yard, that feels sustainable because that means you're just putting good swings and putting a good approach and good at-bats together. And so I think that's maybe the most encouraging part about this, is it seems like something that he can continue to do.
It's also been left on left, yeah? So he was 7 of 21 left on left after he hit the triple off Hader in this Astros series in game one in the ninth inning. But yeah, it's he's on a 46 homer pace. You know, if he was able to hit over 25, and he was able to hit, you know, I don't care as much about batting average, but let's just say 275, 25 or so homers, steals his 40 some bases. You know, it would be another step up on a staircase progression here, where we're talking about, like, when they're winning 90 plus games, hopefully in a couple of years, maybe he is your Trey Turner-ish MVP candidate. Like, that's kind of the dream, I think. And it's not that crazy anymore. Speaking of 23-year-olds, Luis Garcia. So last pod we talked about, hey, let's give the guy his roses. He's playing some decent ball. And I think kind of we both, back of our heads, were like, ah, this is going to cool off at any moment. Well, he went 5-for-12 in this series against the Astros. Hits in all three games, drove in two, and had a 3-for-4 performance with a stolen base today. He actually stole two bags in this series. So he's 5-for-5 on the year. The Nats are running more, so is he. I would have lost an unbelievable amount of money if you asked me who had more stolen bases right now, Luis Garcia or CJ Abrams, 21 games into the season, but he's 5-for-5. He's hitting .317, Toby. This is, again, too early to write a letter to anybody about, but he deserves to be commended, because I and a lot of other people would have run him out of here already. And they gave him one last shot, and it couldn't be going better.
Yeah, I'm thrilled that he's doing this, because obviously you want to see guys succeed, even if you've been frustrated like we had of what you'd seen throughout his career. But again, Grant, I'm going to echo this until we see a longer sample size, and I'm not trying to be down on him because I love the fact that he's playing so well, but it's just one of those things that we've had a long enough sample size of him that these things shouldn't surprise you. Maybe the length of time that he's done this maybe surprises you, but like, I think the defense has maybe been the most surprising part, that he's played a little bit better there. But seeing him have a good approach and hit the ball in the gap in left center and do things like that, we've seen him do that before. I think the frustrating part is the consistency hasn't been there. Now, we've seen it for, you know, the majority of the 20 games so far, 21 games of the season. So that's nice. But this isn't a 1 month trial for Luis Garcia. And I think that's the other thing. Like, we want to give him his flowers. There's no doubt he's been fantastic, and I'm not trying to poo poo what he's done, but he's got to continue doing this all season long, because he's capable of it. He's shown you this for these types of stretches before, and he's doing it again this year. Now, can you continue it? And it's not even always the results, Grant, because, you know, last year, I don't think he wasn't great when he got sent down, but it wasn't a results thing. It was his approach, his professionalism. Maybe last year really taught him a lesson, because I think this year you've seen early on, he's put together professional at-bats. He's not just swinging at the first pitch every single time. It used to be that you could, you know, if you wanted to go hit up the sports book beforehand, if there was a bet that Luis Garcia was going to swing at every first pitch, you felt like you weren't going to get good odds, because he did always swing at the first pitch. Now he's putting together professional at-bats. He's coming up in big situations and coming through. I mean, he looks like a more mature player, but again, it's 21 games. So I just need to continue seeing it. But yeah, for what he's done early this season, I think they've made the right decision to keep giving him more chances, and this one last chance, hopefully he keeps making the most of it.
Another big reason the Nats pulled off the series win over the Astros, Joey Meneses got out of his funk. He was in a 2-for-17 going into game two of the series, 5 for his last 9. So he's bumped his batting average up 50 points the last two games, which is indicative of it being pretty early in the season, obviously. But he was 10 for 55 at the plate. You attack on a 5 for 9. Now he's got the average up to 235. I mean, my issue with Meneses still remains. There's just not enough power for a guy who's a DH first baseman. He has not homered in over 100 at-bats going back to last season. You know, he did double a lot last year and wasn't doing that early. Does now finally have a double on the year. But, you know, it's 14 singles and a double for him this season. But if he's driving in runs, especially with two outs, which he did in the Sunday game to help distance Washington from Houston, then you can kind of live with it a little bit longer. But the OPS is 561. Better at bats, better contact, better approach for him. But there's just not a whole lot of damage in that swing. And, you know, in his role, that's just always going to frustrate me.
Yeah, exactly. In that role, you need some power. You need something at least. And he's not giving you a whole lot of that. But he drove in some runs in the Astros series. And I think the big thing for him is you see him when he's going well, he's staying, keeping the weight back and driving the baseball. And when he's not, he's lunging and he's all out on his left foot. And it's just a weird swing. And you'd think for someone that's had as much experience that he'd be able to correct that on the fly. But it seemed like when he was in his funk that that's kind of what he was doing. It seemed like he stayed back on the baseball a little bit better this series. So if he can continue to do that, you know, there was a little stretch last year where he had a string of home runs and, you know, like three or four in a week or something like that. Maybe he can recapture some of that. But I think the reality is if you expect him to be a 25 homer guy, like, you know, kind of felt like he was going to be when he first got called up, that's not going to happen. So he's going to be what he's going to be. And that's someone that has to be very productive when guys are on base. And, you know, he was over the weekend series with the Astros. He's going to have to continue that because that was his calling card last year. So if he does that, that's fine. But again, for his position where I don't really particularly trust him with a glove on, he's basically a DH only for me with an occasional fill in at first base. You need a little bit more, but when you're doing your job, you deserve to be commended.
He had the game-winning hit on Saturday, which, you know, unless James Wood or Dylan Cruz hits a walk-off home run or something this year, good luck topping that game this season in terms of a win for a team that's probably not going to make the playoffs. You got the 2019 club back in the ballpark celebrating the World Series 5 years later, which we'll talk about in a minute. Everybody's partying in the suite. They're showing them on Masson, right? The guys have been on the broadcast throughout the day on the radio and on TV. And then eventually Meneses hits the game winner. But I thought what made the game just spectacular was the Lane Thomas throw to the plate, bang, bang play. You get Altuve by ended up being a couple steps on a tremendous throw from Lane Thomas, who he hadn't been able to help a lot offensively. He's hitting some bad luck. He's just not having the same success this year. He's kind of crashed back down to earth in an ugly way. He's 1 for 11 in the series, but you can't have a bigger moment than throwing a guy out at the plate to keep the game tied before you go to extras and eventually, obviously, in the 10th, and then Meneses soon thereafter won the game. But I think that's going to be, you know, right now the minus 400 odds on that being the win of the year, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, that was fantastic. It was so much fun. I was at the ballpark on Saturday and, you know, you have CJ leading it off with a home run, which was awesome. And then you have, you know, the ninth inning heroics of Senzel getting on. And then you have CJ Abrams getting into scoring position. Jesse Winker comes through in the excitement there. And then, like you said, Nassim Nunez, or in the top of the 10th, sorry, you get Lane Thomas throwing Altuve out at the plate with some great work by Kyle Finnegan in that inning. And then Nassim Nunez comes in from second base to score after Joey Meneses hits the long, what would have been a double walk-off. Just an awesome win, so much fun. And I think the Nats deserve some commendation for how well that weekend went over, how well everything went. Like, it was a really cool weekend. You know, just even in between innings, you've got Baby Shark playing up there. You've got different videos from players that aren't on the team anymore, like Scherzer and Soto and all the different guys. And you've got, obviously, Zim in town. You've got Howie Kendrick there. Like, I just thought the whole weekend was awesome to the point where, you know, if you get emotional like I do it sometimes just as a fan, like seeing the video up on the screen almost brought you to tears remembering what it was like when this team was playing for a championship and ultimately winning it in 2019. So I thought the whole weekend was awesome. And like you said, Grant, like it's going to be tough to beat it just because of all the extra stuff with it. You're celebrating 2019. You walk it off against the Astros and you come back on Sunday. You win 6-0. You win the series against the Astros. Just as you're honoring that team, I thought it was so appropriate. I thought it was so cool the weekend as a whole, and especially Saturday, as that win was just so much fun.
I thought it was a nice touch that a lot of the people, as they walked into the ballpark and got their 2019 World Series replica rings, the rings were handed out at a lot of the entrances by 2019 World Series champion Nationals. Like, that's super cool. I mean, what a cool thing for a fan. The rings themselves, did you get one, by the way?
I did, yes. They're fantastic.
I mean, how great are they? They're heavy. They're legit. They look like the real deal. What a just an amazing promotion and giveaway that was. But then to have all those guys back and to see them on the broadcast, and as you said, to reminisce was great. Strasburg did not show, which was disappointing. We're going to have to get to the bottom of exactly, you know, why he wasn't there ultimately. But I know he owns a home in California as well, but he mostly lives in Northern Virginia. It's not that bad of a commute in from McLean, to my knowledge, but I thought he'd be there just because they patched it up. Obviously, there's still some sour feelings, and who knows what else went on, but that was kind of the only bummer for me. I know not everybody was there, but the vast majority of the guys that are not currently in baseball were there, and certainly all the guys that could make it that are, you know, pretty easily commute in. You know, you had guys flying in from all over the country, and who knows, maybe even outside of the states at this point. But Strauss was not there, which, you know, was a shame for him to not get his flowers. I think also for the fans, like this was about the fans in a way too. It was the first chance because they, like the players, were robbed of all the celebrations after the World Series to really have, you know, that big culminating kind of therapeutic, release and moment. And they didn't get that with their World Series MVP and maybe the most important player in franchise history.
Yeah, I mean, it was tough because, you know, you're sitting there in the stands and you just want to feel like you get to see Steven Strasburg, the World Series MVP, and it felt like, oh, here's a perfect moment for it, where they're talking about the different players, and at one point there was a fan that was doing some postseason trivia, and it was like, what happened? Who hit the game-tying home run in Game 6? Adam Eaton. Who won World Series MVP? Steven Strasburg. And it's like, all right. It's awesome. That's fantastic. Where's Strauss? Like, you just missed having him there. And the crazy part, Grant, is it just feels like you haven't seen Strauss, if you're a Nats fan, in so long, to the point like you saw him pitch a little bit in 2021, but it feels like the last time you saw him pitch was, what, the NLCS at Nats Park? Like, it just feels like you haven't seen him in so long. And this is a guy that, if you're a Nats fan, you just want to give him the praise that he deserves for being so good on that run, for winning the World Series MVP, for being the stalwart that whole postseason run and keeping them alive in Game 6 with his performance. Like, you just want to give him that adoration, and it just sucks because every single time you'd see all these other guys there, and then they'd show highlight videos, and you see Steven Strasburg breaking off a nasty changeup in the World Series, and you just didn't get the chance to see Strauss. So I was disappointed. It's the one thing that's obviously it's kind of out of the Nationals' control. It seemed like they have fixed all the relationships there. Again, we'll figure things out more as time goes on. But to me, that was the one disappointing thing of the weekend because, you know, people just wanted to have one more opportunity or at least an opportunity to say thank you to Steven Strasburg because it just feels like they haven't had a chance to do that. But it wasn't to be, I guess.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Long gone.
Quick look at the minor leagues, and we'll do a much deeper dive in our pod later in the week. But last 10 days for the Nationals, just a quick update on some of the top prospects. Dylan Cruz over a 10-day sample here, 5 for 23 at the plate, a 724 OPS, 217 average. James Wood has cooled off considerably since his four-hit multi-homer game, going back to last Thursday, but he does have an 827 ops over the last 10 days, which is still right up there among the team's top 30 prospects. I believe second best among all of their hitters in the top 30 over the last 10 days. Brady House hit a home run, had an 814 OPS last 10 days. Yoani Morales has certainly struggled a bit, 636 ops over that time. And speaking of struggling, Elijah Green, man, still in Fredericksburg to start the season. Top five pick last year, you know, guy that we haven't really talked a lot about on the pod, frankly, because there's never anything necessarily to update other than he struck out a bunch. And I don't like to be mean. I mean, the guy's got an enticing and tantalizing skill set. He can run. He can play the field. He's got massive power, but he can't hit. And if you can't get on base with your bat, it's kind of hard in this sport to do a whole lot else. He's hitting 180. To begin the year with a 597 OPS, which isn't horrendous until you find out that he's got 28 strikeouts in 50 at-bats. Remember, last year, he struck out about 50% of the time. Well, this year, he's up over 50% right now in strikeout rate, and that's repeating low A as a 20-year-old. It was a top-five pick 2 years ago, so this is not the start to the season we were hoping for and the adjustments we wanted to see from Elijah Green.
Yeah, it's disappointing with Elijah Green because this is a guy that, to me, might still have the highest ceiling out of the entire system with his ability in just about every single facet of the game. The thing that he lacks is the most fundamental part of baseball as a hitter, putting the bat to the ball, and he just hasn't been able to do that. The strikeouts, you just can't have that many, obviously. You can't be striking out close to 50% of the time, much less over 50% of the time. Even if you cut it in half, it'd be still a bad strikeout rate. And if you're a Nats fan, like, if you cut it in half, you feel like you could still make that work with the rest of his skill set. But that just seems like a long way off. There were some hopes with Elijah Green. Like, I saw stuff on Twitter that he was tweaking his swing, maybe trying to get some of the length out of the swing, shortening it a little bit, being a little more compact to the ball, just finding ways to make sure that he could make contact. And it hasn't made much of a difference. Like, he hit one over the batter's eye this year, and I think in Lynchburg when they were on the road, and that's awesome. You see that, and you get excited about the potential, but you just look at the numbers and see the amount of times he strikes out of the plate, and it's something that, I don't know, it's not really encouraging, Grant, because look, you can have all the talent in the world, but if you can't hit the ball, then it's just never going to work. So hopefully at some point it can get turned around, but things don't look good for Elijah Green. But with the other guys, Grant, I mean, this is something I think we need to look at. Like, we were talking about James Wood getting called up. We'd still love that. I think that at any point, if he were to get called up, it wouldn't be too soon. I think that he's kind of shown that he can play, even though, you know, he's kind of come back down to earth a little bit. He can still clearly play. Dylan Cruz, on the other hand, whatever. But when you look at the big league ball club, like, Jesse Winker has been fantastic. they're going to hang on, and Jesse Winker is going to have a spot until they probably try to deal him at the deadline. So he's going to stick around. You got to think Stone Garrett's coming back at some point. I think Eddie Rosario's kind of been a bit of a miss so far with what they tried to get out of him, you know, as a minor league invite that ultimately made the roster. So maybe he gets moved out when Stone Garrett comes back up. I don't know that they're going to kick out Jacob Young at this point. So it might just end up being something where they just continue to have James Wood playing AAA, even though we don't necessarily love that. He could stick around in AAA and maybe he gets called up after the deadline, or, you know, just kind of see how things are going. But when you've got a ball club that's won three out of their last four series against some pretty good ball clubs, you don't really want to change things up, even though you get a really good player in James Wood. But to me, I just think that they're going to keep rolling with this, even though we'd love to see him at Nats Park. You know, we'd love to see him at the Dodgers series coming up on Tuesday. That's probably not going to happen. We'd love to see him at the beginning of May when they come back home against the Blue Jays. It just seems to me like maybe we got a little bit too excited, rightfully so. But I think they're just going to kind of stick with what they've got.
I could see him up on that homestand. I could be wrong, but Toronto and Baltimore, the AL East homestand, starting Friday, May 3rd. You know, Cade Cavalli, I think, debuted on a Friday night. He wanted to get a little juice in the ballpark. You know, the news broke a few days beforehand. People bought tickets. I could see, you know, Friday, May 3rd against Toronto, and I'm just completely guessing, right? But it's very possible it'll be a month, as you said, 6 weeks. But I do think, you know, the Orioles is theoretically a really good opportunity to draw for them. You know, that's not a long homestand. It's only 5 days. So do you wait till you have, you know, 6 or 7 or something like that to try to boost the numbers? But I would love to see him get his shot for sure. Remember to subscribe, rate, review this podcast. Do all the podcasty things that you can wherever you listen to your audio. We will shout you out and read your comments. And thank you for listening. Let's start with Nats Nut Maryland, who says, outstanding analysis of everything Nats. Grant and Toby provide valuable insight both at the major league and minor league levels. Every Nats fan should listen to their podcast. That's the way it's done, people. Nats Nut Maryland. He gets it.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.
That is the way that it's done, Toby. Wes, a.k.a. Skins Fan 1020, says appointment listening. Absolutely love the show. GP and Tobes do an amazing job providing statistical and analytical analysis to the sport I love so much. I craved a well-produced Nats podcast, and these gentlemen are part of my routine. Thank you, fellas. Keep up the great work. Hear, hear. Thank you, Wes.
Thank you.
A.k.a. Skins Fan. Very cool. So go rate and review, and please spread the word and send the pod around to your buddies who are looking for a Nats pod. I know a lot of people, if you're like me, you want that content. It's not always easy to find, so let people know that we are doing this. For producer Darris, Toby, you get the last word.
Yeah, it was really cool at Nats Park. We're just sitting there on Saturday. We're watching the ball game, and my guy Jack Swellington on Twitter comes up and says hi to me. So I know you're a little more famous than I am, GP, but it's always cool interacting with people that listen to the podcast. Obviously, listen to your show, Grant and Daniel, 106.7 The Fan. I'm sure you've had plenty of interactions with fans, but it's always cool and excited for Nats baseball. Cool to, I believe he lives down in Richmond, made the drive up for the Nats game on the celebration weekend. So just really cool interacting with fans, and a lot of fun to have you guys a part of the ride. I mean, this, you're the ones that make it possible, and it's a lot of fun because, heck, we talk about Nats all the time. So it's just like you get to hang out on our regular conversation. So it's pretty cool.
Did he get a ring? Do we know?
I believe he did. I believe he Good. Did. I have to make Good sure, but I believe he did. Yeah.
All right. I love it. Well, very cool. Well, that's good to hear. Appreciate everybody checking us out. We will see you out at the ballpark. For Toby, I'm Grant saying so long. Enjoy Nats baseball.